It's the StoryCorps podcast from NPR. In this episode, we're looking back on the early days of the AIDS epidemic, when little was known about the disease, and no one understood just how widespread and devastating it would become. From witnessing the first signs of the epidemic.
My dad said, oh, he has this skin cancer called Kaposi's sarcoma. And I said, well, what is that? And my dad said, nobody really knows, but there's some gay men that are getting it.
To responding with compassion and courage.
You were the only person that we could call. There wasn't a doctor, there wasn't a nurse, there wasn't anyone. It was just you.
These are stories about survivors and what it took to do the right thing when no one else would.
You know, everything good that I've been able to accomplish has started with some kind of a burden, and AIDS burdened me.
I'm Michael Garofalo. We'll be right back.
This is Dave Isay, founder and president of StoryCorps. In these difficult times, StoryCorps is more needed than ever before. If this podcast ever made you laugh or cry or has given you hope, please consider donating to StoryCorps this holiday season. Take a moment to text LISTEN to 844-544-7171. Thank you for listening and for thinking of StoryCorps.
Five, four,
space.
Three.
It used to be the playground of governments, but now rockets and satellites are becoming so small, so cheap, that even a podcast can do it.
We have ignition.
I'm Robert Smith, and starting November 29th, the Planet Money team launches their very own satellite into the cosmos. Listen on NPR One or that app you're using right now.
Copy that, Ops One.
Welcome back. In this episode, stories from the early days of AIDS. We'll start in San Francisco in the early 1980s. And what the epidemic looked like through the eyes of a child.
My family were mostly gay guys who were my babysitters and the guys who, you know, took the pictures at my birthday parties. And I called them my aunties.
That's Stefan Lynch Strassfeld. He was raised by gay parents and a large network of his parents' friends. And these guys, who were really Stefan's extended family, were hit very, very hard.
Starting in 82, the first person I knew died of AIDS. I'm a young guy named Steve.
And how old were you at the time?
I was 10 when he was diagnosed. And I remember I was on the beach, and I saw him, and he was covered in these purple spots. And I remember asking my dad, like, what's wrong with Steve? And my dad said, oh, he has this skin cancer called Kaposi's sarcoma. And I said, well, what is that? And my dad said, well, nobody really knows, but there's some gay men that are getting it. And within, I think, 2 months, Steve was dead. And it was pretty much a succession of deaths of my family throughout the next decade. My stepdad, Bill, died in 87. My dad died in 91 after a really grueling 6 months of me taking care of him. You know, I was 19, and at that point, everyone had died except for a handful of stragglers who I now hold near and dear to my heart, my aunties. It was a powerful family. There was a lot of love. And they modeled for me how to survive an epidemic even if you were dying while doing it.
That's Stefan Lynch Strassfeld speaking with his friend Beth Tepper in San Francisco. For the next story, we're headed to the South. Arkansas, actually. Ruth Coker Burks was a young mother in her early 20s when the epidemic hit her home state. And she took it upon herself to care for AIDS patients when their families and even medical professionals wouldn't. Now, Ruth herself has no medical training, but she estimates that she's cared for nearly 1,000 people since the early 1980s. One of those people was Paul Wineland's partner. And in their StoryCorps interview, Ruth and Paul talked about how she got started. Ruth had been visiting a friend at a Little Rock hospital where the state's first AIDS patient was dying.
The nurses were drawing straws to see who would go in and check on him. And so I snuck into his room, and he wanted his mama. And so I marched myself out to the nurse's station, and I said, can we call his mother? And they go, honey, His mama's not coming. He's been here 6 weeks. Nobody's coming. And so I went back in, and he looked up at me and he said, "Oh, Mama, I knew you'd come." I stayed with him for 13 hours while he took his last breath. I called his mother and I told her that he had died. She said, "I'm not burying him." So I had him cremated and I brought him home.
And you buried him when they died, when no one else would.
Yeah. I've buried over 40 people in my family's cemetery because their families didn't want them.
You were the only person that we could call. There wasn't a doctor, there wasn't a nurse, there wasn't anyone. It was just you.
You know, they always say, fake it till you make it. And I faked my way through the whole thing. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know anything.
But you loved them more than their families could. You loved them more than their church could. Now it almost looks like looking back into another world.
It really does. It was such a horrible time, but we're still standing.
That's Ruth Coker Burks and Paul Wineland. If you're wondering what it was exactly that Ruth did to care for these people, it was a little bit of everything. She'd advocate at hospitals and at funeral homes. She even stockpiled medication in a pantry at her house so that when it wasn't available at local pharmacies, people could get the drugs they needed from her. Ruth lost touch with many of the partners and friends of the people she cared for. In fact, it had been more than a decade since Ruth spoke with a guy named Jim Harwood. Jim's son, Raymond, died of AIDS, and Ruth cared for him. They reconnected for this conversation.
How did you feel when you found out he had AIDS?
Well, it's flabbergasted. It's something that, you know, only happens to somebody else, not to you.
Right.
And then I think he knew he was not going to get any better, and he wanted to come home, be with his family. So he quit his job and came home.
I've worked with over 1,000 people, and you are one of only 3 who did not abandon their children when they were dying.
I find that absolutely amazing, surprising, and a terrible fact. I can't imagine anyone deserting a child for any reason.
I've had pharmacists absolutely refuse to order medication, and when I would take people with AIDS into the pharmacy to sign, they would go, "You can keep the pen." And I ended up with an entire coffee can of ink pens because they would say, "We don't want it."
It was like, you know, leprosy or the bubonic plague.
Yeah.
At that time, just sort of like the kiss of death. You hope. That's all you can do.
Right. Y'all have just been so dear to me, and I've thought about you through the years. Of all the people, y'all always came to mind. You were so brave, and you had so much love. I would have loved to have been your child.
That's Ruth Coker Burks with Jim Harwood. Both of these interviews were recorded in Hot Springs, Arkansas. Ruth is one of those rare people who doesn't run away from suffering. In fact, she runs toward it without hesitation. But for Reverend Eric Williams, it wasn't so clear what he should do when AIDS hit his community. It was back in 1991 in Kansas City, Missouri. Williams was a young pastor who had just taken charge of his own church.
So I get a call from a local funeral home. She said, "I've got a really big favor that I want to ask. There's a kid that died. He'd been a member of the church all of his life. His parents were very active in the church. Mom sang in the choir. At any rate, he's 25 years old, and he died of AIDS, and he just happened to be gay." She said, "When his pastor found out how he died, he said, 'Well, you know, I'm not going to do the funeral, and it can't happen in our church.'"
So how did you respond to that then?
Didn't want to do it. it's not appropriate for one pastor to go against what another pastor has said, this is what I'm going to do in my congregation. And I was perfectly all right with that until I went home and started thinking about this family. You know, everything good that I've been able to accomplish has started with some kind of a burden, and AIDS burdened me. So reluctantly, I did the funeral, met the parents of this kid, and, you know, I was used to black dads disowning their gay sons. That was the thing to do. My son can't be gay, but not this family. This father and this mother, they celebrated his life. They embraced all of his friends. And, you know, they taught me more about unconditional love in that little experience than any of the Sunday school books and any of the courses in seminary or any of it. And that was the event that kind of rearranged my life.
That's Reverend Eric Williams speaking with a friend in Kansas City, Missouri. Since 1991, Reverend Williams has devoted himself to ministering to people with AIDS and their families. That's all for this episode. These stories were produced by Jasmine Belcher-Morris, Lena Anwar, and Katie Simon. You can find out what music we used in this episode by going to our website, storycorps.org. And a special thank you to everyone who participated in the Great Thanksgiving Listen this year. We'll share some of your stories in an upcoming episode, so stay tuned. For the StoryCorps podcast, I'm Michael Garofalo. Until next time, thanks for listening.
StoryCorps thanks our sponsor, Subaru, for supporting our podcast and bringing you this message. Subaru has made the world a better place by donating more than $120 million and over 30,000 volunteer hours to important causes. Subaru and its retailers are committed to doing their part in making a positive impact in the world because they feel it's the right thing to do. Love. It's what makes a Subaru a Subaru.